The young man on bended knee, if I get down, I'm not sure I can get up. On bended knee, and he says, "My dear, would you marry me? I really, really love you in spite of what you are." I heard that a million years ago and I've never forgotten it. I love you in spite of what you are. And so to today's question, do you love me? Now, if you listen to the music radio and all the song compilation on apps like iHeartRadio or AccuRadio, it seems as if love fills the air. And then think about it. So do you recall these ones? If you're a golden oldie, you'll remember these. Endless Love, Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. Endless Love, you remember that one? The Bee Gees, How Deep Is Your Love? That was a great song. It was number one for 3 weeks in 1977, if you remember that. Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, another great song. Love, Love, Love. I Can't Stop Loving You, Ray Charles, 1962. Can you remember these? Yeah, of course you can. And, of course, one of the big ones, Paul McCartney and Wings, My Love, which was on top of the hit parade for 4 weeks. And then at the other end of the scale, from Handel's Messiah to Mozart's Requiem Mass, and from Vivaldi's Gloria, which I hope the choir will sing for us on the 10th of December with the Christmas music, from Vivaldi's Gloria to the Gregorian chants of Assisi. Hundreds of hymns in our folders over here and in the old church hymnary. We called them hymns of adoration and praise. They're all love songs. That's what they are. They're all love songs of the people who believe in Yahweh to their God. And so, why did I struggle today if love fills the air like that? Well, I concluded that my difficulty lies in the fact that I think the word love has become almost meaningless. It's used so often and with so little thought. It's one of those words that almost become a word that has no value, and yet we continue to use it endlessly, it seems, because whatever the love, whatever the word means, it continues to trouble and evade us, and we need to know the answer, do you love me? And so today, once again, we stand to seek the ancient wisdom and stand at the crossroads and look and ask, where are the ancient paths, where is the good way, and how should we walk in it? And we need to know the answer to that question. Because, as Jeremiah reminds us, there you will find rest for your souls. 1983, do you remember John Paul Young, Love Is in the Air? You remember that song? I could sing it to you if you like. No, thank you, did you say? Love is in the air, everywhere I look around. Love is in the air. You know the song? Every sight and every sound, and I don't know if I'm being foolish, and I don't know if I'm being wise, but it's something that I must believe in, and it's there when I look in your eyes. And the second verse goes on, love is in the air and the whisper of the tree. And it ends, but it's something that I must believe in, and it's there when you call out my name. Peter, you come with me. You and I have a conversation. Do you love me? And Jesus wants an opportunity to look Peter in his eyes. He calls out his name, Peter, let me look at you. Answer my question. Do you love me? And so the ancient wisdom today comes to us in the shape of that story that Colin read, a story that starts in the upper room in Jerusalem and ends on the lakeshore in Galilee by way of the chief priest's residence in Jerusalem. Now, here's a surprise. It's Jesus asking the questions. Now, why would that be? Why would Jesus need to be asking Peter, do you love me? Wouldn't you have thought that after everything that had happened, that it would have been the other way around. Peter has promised unfading loyalty to Jesus. I will lay down my life, Jesus. I'll die for you. That's what Colin read. That's what I'll do. And of course, Jesus didn't believe him. He was right, of course. Because within hours, Peter swears black and blue that he doesn't know Jesus. Aren't you one of his men? Asks a slip of the girl of a girl at the door. Nope. Never seen him. Again, the same question from a police sergeant. As Peter stands with the cops and the security firm's employees as they all stand around his fire trying to get warm on a cold spring evening. You're one of his men, aren't you? Nope. And again, but I saw you in the garden with him earlier tonight. This from a relative of the man whose ear Peter had chopped off with his sword. Nope. Never seen him. A comprehensive betrayal. So why is Jesus asking Peter if Peter loves him? Wouldn't you think that it would have been the other way around? Peter asking Jesus if Jesus still loved him. But no. Jesus asking Peter. And so the story unfolds on the lakeshore. These men were out fishing. That's what you do when you don't know what else to do. You go back to what you know. And they'd gone out fishing and had caught nothing. And then there's a man on the beach. And it's not Peter who recognized him, but it was John. And he must have nudged Peter and said, "Hey, Peter, look over there. There's the master." And Peter, impetuous as ever, pulled some clothes on. He was stripped for work, dived into the water, and swam ashore to meet Jesus. But before that, Jesus had spoken to them. Now, it says here in the text that Jesus spoke to them. But I don't think he spoke to them. I think he probably had to yell at them. Imagine this. You don't speak to someone who's 100 meters away from you. If you can imagine the length of the running track, 100 meters, it's quite long, isn't it? If I was talking like this to someone at the other end, would they hear me? I don't think so. So he probably yelled out, "Hey, you guys, have you caught any fish?" And they probably yelled back, "No!" And he said, "Well, drop the net on the other side." And they did. And they caught a lot of fish. It says 153. I'm not sure why the number's recorded in the gospel, but it was a big load. And they sat down and had breakfast with him around another fire that had been built. And after breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, come and have a conversation with me. Do you love me? Do you love me more than these?" And Simon Peter says, "Yes, Master, you know I love you." And he said a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Jesus, you know I love you." And a third time he said it, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And it says that Peter was upset that he asked him for the third time, "Do you love me?" And I thought to myself as I read that, "You silly man, Peter. What do you think Jesus thought when you denied him for the third time?" "Do you love me?" And Peter answers in exasperation, "Pete, Master, you know everything there is to know. You've got to know that I love you. You know everything there is to know." You see what's happening here? Jesus is radically reimagining this idea of love. "Peter, don't think that when I ask you if you love me, I'm asking you to make another stupid promise. You've done that once and you proved yourself incapable of keeping it. Do you manage how you said? Do you remember how you said you'd die for me?" Well, that wasn't true, obviously, was it? "You ran scared when they asked you if you knew me." No, 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 no. When I ask you if you love me, I'm asking you if you believe you're worthy of my life, which I gave up for you. Remember? You're right, Peter. I do know everything there is to know, and that's not anything magical. But I just know from what I've seen around here that most of you aren't living life the way it was meant to be lived, and I know how hard it is to live life in its fullness. Actually, it's impossible unless your life is centered on me. And so, the ancient wisdom says that love, deep love, is always about restoration to life in its fullness. That's what this thing called love is and what it does. It draws life out from the other person, the person's very best, and it makes them whole. Love is the energy that calls life into being, life that never was. So let me hear it again, Peter. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Of course you know everything there is to know about me, Lord. You've got to know that I love you. Well then, feed my sheep. So you're now in a position to take care of my people. And just in passing, and with a hint of a smile on my face, I want to read to you what John Calvin said about this. He had some really dark and gloomy things to say about taking care of the people of God. Listen to this, see what you think. The office of feeding is in itself laborious. Now, this was written by John Calvin in Geneva. The office of feeding is in itself laborious and troublesome, since nothing is more difficult than to keep men, and I think he probably meant women as well, under the yoke of God, among whom there are many who are weak, others are wanton and unsteady, others who are dull and sluggish, and others who are slow and unteachable. What do you make of that? Hey, John, I think you sound a bit depressed. Why don't you see a psychoanalyst like the Pope did? So let's go back to the beginning. Do you recall? Right at the very start of this series, we talked about the shame and disgrace of the man and the woman that they experienced in the garden. And what did they do? They hid. And now by the lake, the resurrection has stripped shame away, and we have this wonderful story of the man who, more than most, might have felt shame, who fairly races to Jesus. He dives in and swims 100 meters to shore, and there in the company of the man he betrayed, life was gifted back to him. He overcame the fear of not being loved, and there need be no one who is so ashamed that they cannot come to Christ. If we are to love sincerely and with simplicity, and that's the only love that's worth having, sincerity and simplicity, we must first of all overcome the fear of not being loved. And this can't be done by forcing ourselves to believe in some illusion, saying that we're loved when we're not. And so we must strip ourselves of our greatest illusions about ourselves, frankly recognize in how many ways we are unlovable, descend into the depths of our own being until we come to basic truth that is inside of us and come to see that we're lovable after all in spite of everything. And we will overcome the fear of not being lovable. Only this morning I heard a conversation with a woman, a mother who'd been involved in a family tragedy from which she emerged feeling gutted. And it sounded as if she held herself responsible for what had happened. The interviewer said to her, "Have you ever been to counseling?" "No," she said. And when he said, "Why?" she said, "I didn't think I deserved to feel any better. I didn't think I deserved to feel any better." Understandable, but tragic. And that's what happened to Peter, you see. He'd gone back fishing. That's what you do when you're feeling totally confused. You do what you've always done. He didn't believe he deserved to feel any better about himself. And Jesus said, "Wrong, Peter. You deserve to be the man you were born to be." And that morning, Jesus gave Peter a reason to imagine and then to believe that he did deserve to feel better. So, do you love me may perhaps by accident be the very question that points us to the truth about who we are. It was St. Augustine who said, "Lord, you have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." What he did there, you see, was to make a wonderful design claim. What and who and what are we made for? For Yahweh, the Creator who is made known in Jesus. So to be truly and fully human, we must found ourselves in relationship to the one who made us and for whom we were made. And that's what happened on the lakeshore that morning when Peter and Jesus had a walk together and talked together. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Master, you know there is everything there is to know. You've got to know that I love you." "Well spoken, Peter. You spoke your truth. There can be no doubt that when you said, 'Lord, you've got to know that I love you,' that came from the bottom of your heart. The challenge now, Peter, is to live the truth. Speak the truth and live the truth. So, brothers and sisters in Christ, do you love him? Speak and live the truth, for that's the only way the people out there will recognize that we're his disciples." It was the very first verse that Colin read this morning. "When they see the love we have for each other, then they will believe."